Morning. I'd like to follow along. A lot of the scriptures I'll use will come from the book of Ecclesiastes today. In the first chapter of Solomon, in verse 17, he makes this statement. I gave myself or my heart to no wisdom, madness, and folly. And as you read this book, it's kind of a description of his experiences. As we remember, Solomon, when he was put in as king, was granted a wish by the Lord of, he asked what, he would have, and he asked for wisdom. So the Lord gave him that as well as riches. And so because of the gift that the Lord had given him, he tried to discern the facts of life, the problems of life that he might be able to relate to other people and tell them what he had observed. And you remember, right? Lots of times he came away discouraged or frustrated with what he learned. But when we think of this statement, I gave my heart to know wisdom, my question to you today is, what have you given your heart to? What are you trying to know? What are you trying to represent? Who have you given your heart to? Might be a more appropriate question. Have you kept it to yourself? Or have you given your heart to someone else or given it to the Lord? When you think of this statement of giving ourselves, that can be applied to several things in life. We give ourselves in marriage to our mate. If you play sports, you may give yourself or your heart. You give your whole heart to the team. You be a team player. When you become entering the workforce, you may give your heart to your job. Not everybody does. You may give yourself to getting a good education. Some people give themselves for our country to the fullest extent of giving. They give their lives. They give themselves for our freedom. Some people give their hearts to serve the Lord. And it reminds me of the song in, I think it's 202 in the Blue Book, Do You Know My Jesus? Have you given your heart to know Jesus? Some people change how much of their heart they give to the Lord. What about you? Did you give your heart to know Jesus when you were younger and the race of life, has it affected how much of your heart you have kept giving to the Lord? Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon, and in my mind, it's a book written by the wisest, richest man of his time who gave himself to study every aspect of the physical life that we have here on earth. He compared rich men to poor men. He compared wise men to foolish. He compared healthy to sick. And he compared man's life to beast. And you can be discouraged if you don't read and study all 12 chapters to the very last verse. In chapter 1, verse 2, he starts off by saying, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And so if you only read to verse 2, you may close the book and say, well, there's no hope. I just will give up. There's no use to go on. But when you finish the book, you realize the perspective this is given in. And it's given in perspective of Solomon speaking from his earthly physical body. And a lot of his words give you the impression that I just realized no matter what I do here, I can't take it with me. And so as he shares his revelations with us through this book, he implies that our physical fate is no different than the dead skunk in the middle of the road. The skunk breathes air just like we do. The skunk needs water just like we do. And the skunk was made from the dust of the ground just like we were. And I forgot to write down which chapter that was in, but he makes mention of, in chapter 3, verse 21, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? And there's a couple places throughout the book that he comments about the fact that there was no difference between man or beast in the eyes of the physical world because they both end up in the same place. They both end up dead. So all through the book, Solomon seems to lament about, no matter what I do, I'm just like my dog Rover. Eventually, I'm going to be dead all over. And I'm no different than my dog. But when you get to the end, chapter 12, he gets to the nitty-gritty, the thing that really matters at the end of the book. Read verses 13 and 14. He ends it in this fashion. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And that is the only thing that mattered. Oftentimes when we're dreaming about our future and thinking about what's limiting us, if only I could have a better paying job, if only I had a better house, and whatever thing you want to plug in there, that is mankind on a daily basis, if only I weren't on the road I'm on. We don't get to choose every road that life makes us travel. And Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, a lot of you younger ones won't know this, but back in the 1960s, when I was growing up, time actually did exist, there was a group out, I think it was, they were called the Byrds, and they spelled their band group BYRDS. And they took this chapter and they put it to music, and it was actually, I think it's in the top 10 of popular music at that time. And the title that they put on, I think it was Turn, Turn, Turn. And they added that phrase in as they use these first eight verses of the third chapter. And so if you want to Google that and hear how that song was written, it might be interesting to you. But this group of verses is one of my favorites in the Old Testament because it reminds us that there is a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. And with the changing of our society today, if this song was published now and somebody figured out it was a quotation from the Bible, it would probably be banned from being played in any of our schools and in many other areas because of the change in the mindset of society. When a family finds out that their child has cancer, or if their child has been in a car wreck in intensive care, all the family's energy, all the family's resources is pooled together to try and save that child. On the news last month, the Children's Family Hospital at Iowa City has gotten a lot of publicity because of one man's effort to raise money for it and to help those unfortunate families that have found themselves dealing with a child trying to survive cancer. And it doesn't matter what the crisis is, this is how we have to react when something happens in our lives that we would never choose to experience on our own. Our son Ryan was born in 1977, and when Joyce gave birth to all three of our sons, she had to have them C-section. And Ryan was scheduled to be born in the morning. And so once mom was up at the hospital with me, and once the C-section was done and we found out we had a baby boy, and he seemed to be all, seemed to have everything okay, mom and I went out to lunch. In 1977, there were no cell phones. And when we got back from lunch, there was somebody to meet me at the door at the hospital. Joyce was still recovering in the recovery room and was not in condition to consent to anything. And they said, "Mr. Engel, your boy has turned blue on us three times since you left. We need to get him to Blank Children's Hospital immediately." And so we did that. And they had a specialist there. I still remember his name. He was a Japanese man. His name was Dr. Sahu. And he was a specialist in charge of the intensive care unit for babies that had had problems. And he pulled me into his office. He says, "I'm going to be right out open with you, Mr. Engel. Your son has a 50-50 chance of being alive tomorrow morning. His lungs did not develop completely. He has hyaline membrane disease, and back at this time, they didn't have as good a treatments as they do now. And he basically was telling me, don't expect him chances to be good that he would survive. Ryan spent 10 days in that intensive care newborn unit. Back then in my 20s, I was very good at my job, but all my abilities that I was able to use in my job done nothing to help my son. The only thing that I could do was pray. The phrase Solomon used, I gave myself to this and that. That's all I could give. A health crisis in the family makes you focus. It makes you give of yourself, to give of your time, to give of your money, to try and overcome it. All of life crises can be that way. It can be a marriage crisis. It can be a financial crisis. It can be a flood or a tornado. In my 20s and 30s, I worked for three different companies that had pension and health care plans that are fully paid for. But I had to sacrifice things to get it. I had to choose if I wanted to work days, I would have to work Sundays. My other choice was to work the evening shift. I could not stomach working Sundays. It was the Lord's Day. I spent 8 years working nights so I wouldn't have to work on the Lord's Day. Everybody can tell you a story of some kind where they had to make a decision in life. But when I made that choice, I had to leave to go to work right at the very same time my kids got off the bus. And I had to stay until morning if we had problems with any machinery. So I'd work from 5 in the evening till 5:30 in the morning if we had problems. In 1998, I quit those jobs to go self-employed. I gave up all those pension and health care benefits. 11 years later, our economy slumped in 2009, and I lost 70% of my customers. I was too old to go back to John Deere, and so I went into an extreme amount of debt to try and survive, to diversify so I could save my business. I did save my business, but I lost my house. But that's okay because my mother and others helped me through that problem. As I said before, we don't get to choose all the roads we have to travel in life. But to survive my financial crisis from 2009, I focused even more time into work. And in the words of Solomon in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 13, you could make the case that I gave my heart to work to avoid financial bankruptcy. And so I stole a little bit of time from my spiritual studies and everything else in my life to do it. And when I was 12 years old, I gave my life to Jesus in baptism, and I was excited to be a Christian. And I remember seeing that same thing when Carson George was baptized, and I had him in class. And I remember he and Max both, when they would get started up here, they had to pull a stool out from underneath so we could see them to hear the reading. And they have changed since then. Probably both of them are taller than me now. But I remember in class one day that Carson said that he wanted to be an evangelist someday. And when we're young, we have all kinds of ideas of what we think we might do. someone else in that class said, well, evangelists don't make very much money. And I could never forget Carson replying at that time, I don't care. Now, I don't know whether Carson would say that, whether he, now or not, but we have points in our life where that's where we're at. But life events, life crises, should never be a reason to rob time from our relationship with God. But rather, it should be a time that we lengthen our relationship in study and in prayer to get through those crises. As long as I'm able to get up here and speak, I intend on bringing back people from our past and how they've touched our lives. And I don't intend to ever let you forget about Larry George and the impact that he had on me. 40 years ago, Larry stood right up here and gave a lesson that I've never forgot. He said, if you don't feel as close to God as you used to, guess who left? And I've mentioned this before, but it doesn't hurt to bring it up on a regular basis. We don't take medicine just one day and expect to be well for the rest of our lives. We need to be reminded. Sometimes medicine is a reminder given to us by others. Sometimes medicine is a reminder given to us when we read the scriptures. And when we let crisis get in the way of taking our medicine, it affects our spiritual health. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I would go two or three years or more without going to a doctor. Now that I'm 65, I have trouble going two or three months without going to see a doctor. And lately, it turned into 2 or 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, this past Friday, I was struck with Bell's palsy, which paralyzes one side of your face. And it takes anywhere from 2 to 5 weeks. Some people, Joyce ran into somebody the other day that said her dad had had it for 3 months. I'm grateful that on Monday I was able to move my mouth again. And these things that I've experienced here, as I seems like every year the Lord tries to find a different way to reach me. But Monday, I was excited because I could smile again. And I thought during this 3 week period that I had this, that if somebody come and held me up and told me, they wanted me to smile instead of give them my money, or they'd have to kill me. And I couldn't smile to save my life for the past 3 weeks. And it makes you appreciate something little like that. And it reminded me of when I was growing up and when us kids would do something to irritate mom and dad and we'd go around with a pouty face. I can't remember the exact wording, but mom would say, you better get that frown off your face or your face will freeze that way. And you'll have to look that way all the time. Well, I had to look that way for 3 weeks, and it really bothered me. So, did I think mom's words of wisdom from my childhood is coming back to me? Yeah, it did. Well, Monday when I was getting over that, I had a new chapter that the Lord tried to open with me to teach. And I got to my job site to meet a cement guy, and he was late. And all of a sudden, every inch of my skin started to itch. My vision went blurry, and then my tongue swelled up. And when my tongue swelled up, I knew I was in trouble. And I knew my throat could be next, and that I had had an allergic reaction of some kind. And I have never been allergic to any food or any medicine in my life. Why are things changing for me now that I'm 65? Well, they do. And so the Lord showed me that I'm not in charge. Every day when I get up, I don't know what that day is going to bring, whether that day will be my last. I run my own business, but I could do nothing to save myself but to pray and call 911 and get an ambulance. I was given an EpiPen shot to stabilize me, and now I must carry one with me. We just don't know what the day holds. When we allow life's challenges, life crisis, to reduce our exposure to our medicine, to reduce our exposure to how often we come to the assembly to share church fellowship with our brothers and sisters, we've let our life challenges control us rather than letting the Lord lead us. And we need to stop and think about making a change. Because we can get to the point where we lose our identity as being Christ-like. And you may have people say, well, I didn't know you were a Christian. How sad a day that is if we can't personify through our daily actions that's what we want to be, is Christ-like. There is no EpiPen we can give you to save your soul. If you go through this day without making yourself right with God, it's on you. If you die without the Lord this afternoon, no one is going to be baptized for you. You will just be dead. And when I got to this point in my talk, it reminded me of another example I've used before. And I think this football player's name was Pat Tillman. He was an All-American in college playing football. And he was an All-Pro in the NFL. And after the terrorist attack in 2001, and he had played for a while in the NFL, at some point he finally decided, I want to do something with my life that means something. And he quit the NFL in the prime of his career and signed up for the military to go fight terrorism. And he was killed overseas, and it was possibly by friendly fire. And when the publicity of that man's death hit the paper and they talked about the memorial service, one of his closest friends got up and said, you know, Pat didn't have any religion in his life. He's just dead. And to have a close friend say that at your memorial service would be the saddest thing I can think of. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die. We will all face that time. I beg of you to be ready. I had no clue I would ever in my life need somebody to give me an EpiPen to stabilize my life. Your day can change today. Your life may not be what you think it will be. You have to be prepared for the road laid out before us, because most of the time it won't be the road we would have normally chose. Bring this to a close and ask you to examine your relationship with Jesus, because without the Son, you cannot have the Father. Don't leave this building without making yourself right with our Lord.